I have a different idea. Here. If I sit in the middle, that's better.
Closer.
Mm-hmm. I don't get my chair.
My chair.
Huh?
No, you go one side. This.
Sit down.
Oh my God! It's me, Dantas. Wow, I didn't know Bhakti Bhargavaj was so funky. Summary of Bhagavad Gita is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and everyone else is his servant. Are there any questions?
I have a question. Just this morning I was speaking with some Matajis and we're just discussing about how all of us have been devotees, you could say, because we're in Krishna consciousness, we're in ISKCON, but sometimes we find ourselves acting differently. And she was saying, she wasn't talking about herself, she was talking about, you know, like her comment was, and these are people that read Bhagavad Gita, meaning us, that, you know, supposedly we're supposed to know so much, but we continue to act differently to what the Bhagavad Gita says to us. And so it's such a difficult thing to grasp that we have this knowledge, but we still are behaving. Is it ever going to happen that we're going to behave the way that the Bhagavad Gita teaches us to?
We hope so. From one point of view, consider what we'd be doing if we weren't reading Bhagavad Gita. You know, we may be cases, but imagine what kind of cases we'd be if we weren't chanting Hare Krishna. We'd really be probably fit for institutionalization or what have you. Krishna deals with this. Arjuna says, what is it? We know what our duties are and still we act in a different way. So why is that? Krishna says it's anger and lust. Kamesha, krodhesha, pradhunasa. Material desire is so strongly planted in the heart of the conditioned soul that drags away even the intelligence of the person who's trying to control it. One time Srila Prabhupada said, the trouble with my Western disciples is they're not sufficiently afraid of Maya. We think Maya's an easy case. Maya's serious, serious business. So it takes so much serious focus. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's method is making it as easy as possible. We're in trouble when we stop chanting Hare Krishna. You know, I know some people who are devotees and they get in a different way. As long as they're chanting Hare Krishna, they're fine. Therefore, the secret is we should always be chanting Hare Krishna. Don't stop. Don't stop. When we stop, Maya's always there to grab a piece of us. We need to keep in the association of devotees. We need to be always chanting. We need to be under good guidance. Need to pray to Krishna, please help. Need to pick ourselves up again when we crash. Because that, it reminds me of something like when my father was teaching me to ride a bicycle. I'm not quite sure how old I was, but not very. So what's learning how to ride a bicycle? It's getting on your bicycle and going forward and falling. Okay. And you get up again and you go a little more and then you fall. And then after a little bit of that you say, well, I don't think I really want to learn to ride a bicycle anyway. But when you stick to it, then after some time, you're riding very nicely. So Rupa Goswami says, these things we need. Utsaha, enthusiasm. Okay. Like what we have here, energy. And nishchaya. Nishchaya means to have confidence in the process. That I'm sure that because I'm trying to be Krishna conscious, Krishna will help me and I'll finally reach the destination. Some confidence. And dhairya. Dhairya means patience and determination. You know, just what they call stick-to-itiveness. Just to stick with it. Alright, Rome wasn't built in a day. Anything that we want to do takes some time. So determination is to stick with the process. Otherwise, if we get discouraged and leave, how then it's, you know, we're stuck. So determination, let me stick with it. And tat-tat karma pravartana. Tat-tat karma pravartana means doing the various things that we're supposed to do to make spiritual progress. Following the regulative principles, chanting, sitting around, getting up early in the morning, reading the book, so many things. Tat-tat karma pravartana, doing the things that we're instructed to do. Following the principles. And sangha tyaga, getting rid of bad association. Not associating with the alligators and the crocodiles. And satovrite means following in the footsteps of the great devotees. Satovrite. Shatir Bhaktir Prasiddhi. Rupa Goswami says by these six things our devotional service will be established. Is that okay? Yes.
Or sometimes just in the course of a few minutes the consciousness can swing, you know, from pouring out your heart to Krishna, feeling very humble and dependent and helpless, and the next minute totally indifferent, halfway through around the beat bag just goes down and you're off doing something, eating something from the fridge. So which one is real? Is it that when we're seemingly closer to Krishna, more on track, that that's just a product of the modes of nature as well? Or what's going on actually? You don't know where you stand, you don't know what you're
doing. Well, devotional service is the reality. And we may sometimes, is it like, is this where I genuinely am, or is that where I genuinely am? Is that the question?
I figure it's always that one.
Well, that's a good way to figure. If we figure that we're down, then that's good for us. But our constitutional position is to be engaged in service. So if we're having a brilliant day or a brilliant time and we're doing well, then we're in our natural position, healthy position. And when we're drifting, then we're in our not so healthy position. It's not like the real me is, you know, where do I, people want to get in touch with themselves and find the real me and all. You know, it's all like, where is my real mind? It's all over the place. But my real identity is that I'm a servant of Krishna. So the more I'm acting in that way, the more why I'm acting in my neck. Even we see the karmis or materialists sometimes, they just get swept up in it. You know, they're, who knows what they're doing, but they get into the kirtan or they somehow or other get into service. So that's the real them, actually. Even if, you know, 23 and a half hours a day, that's not what they're doing. But for that 10 minutes or half an hour, the real thing came out. That's their real position. So that's like a future hope. Well, they do this much, maybe they'll do some more. Because it increases them. So we want to capitalize on that whenever we're doing well. Keep doing that. Whenever we're not doing so well, try to get time for that. That's the nature of practice, you know, we're sometimes doing better, sometimes doing not as well. But by continuing with the practice, it becomes steady. And what else? The question? Yes. How do we become fixed as devotees? Stay in good company. Stay with those who are good devotees, who are practicing, who are serious. Then it's easier. On our own, it's harder to practice. And by a good association, it's easier. By all these things, by enthusiasm, patience. What else do we have in the question department? I have no idea.
Yep.
Hanuman's yep. got some sort of weapon.
Yep.
What's it called?
Huh?
It's
like
club?
Yep.
Is it a club? I don't know.
It's
a club. Okay, it's a club. That was your question. Okay. Next question is, where do you get one? Join the club. You're studying at the university.
And I've chosen an elective called religion.
Say again?
I've chosen an elective called religion.
An elective called religion.
In that class, we have to do a term paper on any religion. Okay. Some of my friends chose Hindu, and they came to me and asked me about Krishna consciousness. They asked me about how do you know
how do they know? You know, how do we know the pastimes are real because you're reading in a religion class that these are myths and stories? How do they know? How do they know? Well, that's my question to them. They say it's myths and stories. How do you know? Let's put it on an equal ground here. How do you know that it's myths and stories? That means it didn't happen. It's just a story. How do you know? We're taking information from Vedic literature, from self-realized souls. That's our source of knowledge. What's your source? Some speculating professor who doesn't really know. In any case, Krishna says it's a science. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo me tatpratam jatmadayam punar jatmanayam. Krishna says anyone who understands this science of my transcendental appearance and activities becomes liberated. So that means you have to study the science. It's like physics, you know. You come in and say, well, how do you know there's atoms? How do you know there's, you know, protons? It's like, tell me in a minute or I'm out of here. It's a science. Enroll in the course, take up serious study, and you'll understand protons, electrons, neutrons, quarks, and all that kind of stuff. Don't just walk in here and say, how do you know there's atoms? You know, study it seriously. It's a great science. You have to know what Krishna is. And you can understand something about Krishna's activity. But it's just an act. It's not just go. You walk in here and blah, blah.
My question is, Maharaj, Krishna consciousness and spirituality is a spiritual activity. So why is it then that it almost works the same way as material stuff? For instance, what I learned at school, if I don't practice it, then I forget it. Like, so same thing with Krishna consciousness. So much that I've learned, so much that I used to know, and by maybe, let's say, not practicing it for a year, then I forget it, which is the same way it would work if I, you know, had been studying and then...
Why does it work the same way?
Yes.
Because you're the same person. We have the same equipment, the same mind, the same memory.
So there's no special...
It's special, but we're using the same equipment. The same mind, the same intelligence, the same memory. One is applied to Maya, one is applied to Krishna. So the same principles hold. You learn in the material world by hearing, you learn in the spiritual world by hearing. You learn typing by practice, you learn chanting by practice. The same principles are there, but one's applied to Maya, one's applied to Krishna. The same dynamics are to some extent at work. But the direction is very different. And one thing is that it's superficially the same, but on a deeper level there are a lot of differences. Materially, whatever I do, you know, if I stop for a year, it's all lost. Spiritually, my credit is there. It's never lost, even when we go to the next lifetime. Not Krishna's there within the heart. There's a difference between externally, it just appears, you know, they're chanting Mary had a little lamb and we're chanting Hare Krishna. That's the same thing. But that's like, well, they're flipping little metal coins that came with their game, and they're flipping little metal coins that came from their bank. So it appears to be the same thing. They're both flipping little metal coins. These aren't worth anything. And these are worth, you know, a lot. Iron and gold are two different things. So there's a superficial similarity, and there's a deeper difference.
So the practice is more or less the same.
Practice is the same. Somebody's practicing ABCD, and we're practicing memorizing Bhagavad Gita. So practice is practice. But there's a difference between practicing some mundane speech and memorizing Bhagavad Gita. The subject is very different.
I'm just thinking about like how much intensity I had to put in my books in order to get good results. And I'm just thinking about how much I had to work extra hard in order to get my qualification.
It's the same thing.
So I'm like thinking,
Yeah.
I know where you're coming from. I do.
It's the same thing. It's not like to, to qualify as a whatever it is, an executive or a nurse or a, something, we have to work real hard. And to go back to Godhead, we just sort of coach.
It's supposed to be.
It requires, whatever energy you have. It's not miserable, that's the difference.
It's just about to say, what's the path of Krishna consciousness? You enjoy doing it. Studying, we don't enjoy
it. It's enjoyable. But it's not just kind of like lollipop land, where everything is, everything's always big, big smiles and lollipops. And, there'll be difficulty. There must be, it's a material world. Maya's always trying to pull something. There's always some obstacle. So then, be serious. Method is joyful. Method is when you consider everything easy. But we do have to be serious. It does require determination. Get a little hint of what happiness is from the words and activities of the pure devotee. We hardly know what happiness is. But the pure devotees are immersed in it. Rupa Goswami says, when I chant Hare Krishna, I wish I had hundreds of ears and hundreds of tongues. And I could chant right now. They're enjoying so much happiness. They gave up. Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, they were big government ministers. They had aristocracy, they had money. Raghunath Das Goswami had a wife who was like a goddess of fortune. They had a big circle of influential associates. They gave it up as if it was not. How much happiness they must have. We think, if I got some money, I would be happy. If people say something nice about me, I'll be happy. If I get a better job, I'll be happy. If I get a better house, I'll be happy. New curtains, and I'll be happy. And the Goswamis had everything. They were like billionaires by modern times. They had everything. And they gave it up a bit like that. What kind of happiness was it gave them? We can hardly imagine. That's happiness. They were happy just to chant Hare Krishna. And they were, what is that? Gopi Bhavara Samritabdi Bhavara. They were swimming. They were swimming in an ocean of happiness. The ocean of the ecstasy. Krishna's associated. We just maybe get a little taste. Like you. You hang around and you get a taste. You hang around people who are enjoying, you get a little taste of what they're enjoying. So you hang around with the Goswamis, you get a taste of what they're enjoying. Haridas Thakur, a beautiful young woman, came to him in the middle of the night. Dear so young, you're so handsome. I'm burning up for desire for you. Please be merciful to me. Yes, and I'm Chad Hare Krishna. How much happiness you have. Austerity of the mind is satisfaction.
Satisfaction, okay, that's
Mana prasada samyatvam. Austerity of the mind is satisfaction. It means materialist, his mind is always for what next? What else? What can I? He's always like thinking of something more, dreaming of something more. And person who's practicing austerity, like, whatever. Be satisfied, yadrichalabha santushtha. Be satisfied with whatever comes by Krishna's right. Because I won't be satisfied with more. It's not that by agitating my mind, it's not enough. I'll be more happy. That's the way to be always dissatisfied. But those who are Krishna conscious, mana prasanna, so whatever. The Goswamis were sometimes, like Prabhupada, he was sometimes under a tree, sometimes in a big expensive place, mansion. Satisfied. Sometimes we get three chapatis, sometimes we get a big feast. Whatever we get.
Vedic culture and the standards of a devotee. We look at our audience sometimes and we think that the culture that they're in is so far away from it. You know, the things that people are entrenched in and involved in. And then we start to waver maybe to whether to present something that's the next step up for them. That might be achievable for them, or just present it as it is. And I notice Maharaj always present it as it is, you know, even if it's like unpalatable or unreachable almost, they feel, you know. And but when you come down and you compromise, it also doesn't feel very satisfying. But there's a fear that the people, someone might find what you're saying irrelevant otherwise and go away. So how can we become expert to,
you can think of Prabhupada, how Prabhupada was, what kind of a foreign environment he was in. The craziest people in the world. New York. Crazy hippies. And Prabhupada gave the message. Practically everything they didn't want to hear, Prabhupada told them. Those who are interested in the truth, you put it out there. Now we try to make things palatable and so on. Finally, our business is to, you know, lay it on the line. That's what we get paid for.
I noticed yesterday you said something in class that was a bit like that. And after some time, some people got up and left. But then I spoke to them this morning and they said they're coming back today because they thought about it and it was kind of unpalatable and painful, but they realized, yeah, it's true, I'm coming back.
That's
but then you can spread the net very wide. you know, and get a lot of fish inside it, and you start to pull it in. And the anxiety is how to keep as many of them possible in there without jumping out, you know.
Yeah, keep that anxiety. That's, in one sense, that's how a devotee is thinking. He's always thinking, what can I say that will bring this person closer to Krishna? According to the time, place, and circumstance, what can I say that will bring this person?
How can you judge the sincerity of someone, you know, if it's family or friends or students, when you're judging how much you can cut, you know?
There, and those who are meant to get it will take it. But if you don't put it out there, that's there in the Bible also. Jesus told them, you know, that if you keep your candle under a basket, what's it going to do? So you put the knowledge out there, and those who are looking for it will find you. If you're disguising it as, you know, something else, then people who are looking for the something else probably won't be attracted to your version of it anyway. Mm. And the people who are looking for what you're really supposed to give won't find it because you're not giving it. Mm. So better to put it out there. We see Prabhupada's our example, how he did it. Just put it out there. He told Giriraj Maharaj, my Guru Maharaj never compromised. I never compromise, nor should any of my disciples ever compromise. It's also more fun, not to. Two. Prabhupada told us that while chanting, just try to hear yourself chanting. You don't have to meditate on a particular thing. Just chant.
The second question is, what guidelines can you give us for kirtan?
Oh, there's a big topic.
What
guidelines can I give for kirtan? I have a whole seminar on that. On this kind of desire tree, there's a whole 3-day seminar. First thing is, chant something bona fide. I was here yesterday when I arrived, there was somebody who was chanting Govinda Gopal Radhe Radhe Shyam. Govinda Gopal Radhe Radhe Shyam. Again and again. You know, it's concocted mantra. It's all Govinda's the name of Krishna, Gopal's the name of Krishna, Radhe Radhe. But, you know, where is this coming from? So Prabhupada said we should chant what's been chanted by the acharyas. Especially Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. This guy Madhav is creating practically a revolution, because wherever he goes, he just chants Hare Krishna. Everybody's used to chanting so many other things. He sits down and just chants the Maha Mantra for 5 hours, and people are in ecstasy. That wasn't very hard. I mean, do it well, like a lot of the stuff is doing, but, you know, to get the words right isn't that hard. But people, the tendency is there to be unlimitedly creative. So that tendency should be resisted. You should chant. Apart from that, chant loud. There's a lot I could say about kirtan, but I don't know, you know, where to start, where to end. Main thing is chant Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. That's our theme song, you know. There may be so many other mantras, so many other things. but our Prabhupada said we're the Hare Krishna people. So especially we should chant Hare Krishna. And especially, you know, we're in some public place, we want people to, you know, that we're chanting so much or that no one's ever heard before. And that takes you a week to learn. Chant Hare Krishna. That's what we're there for. Yeah. Yes, sir.
It's not really related to Kirtan or spiritual topics. Can I ask you?
Give it a shot.
What is the one quality that a leader should have? What is the one quality?
One quality that
a leader should have.
A leader should have.
And one quality that a follower should have. Actually, I have two questions. That's the first question.
First one. Quality that a leader should have is that he should be a devotee of Krishna. Otherwise, andayatan dairupaniyaman, he's just leading whoever he's leading people into a ditch. He's blind, he doesn't know where he's going, and other people are following him. So the leader should be Krishna conscious. That's the main quality. And the main quality of the follower is that he should follow someone as Krishna conscious. Who's Krishna conscious?
That's a double-edged sword.
Single-edged. Just be Krishna conscious and just follow Krishna. What's your second question?
The second question I've asked you, for someone in the military or for someone in politics.
Someone's which what?
In the military.
Someone in the military.
Military.
Or someone in politics.
Politics.
What is the one thing? What is the one thing they can do to help society at large?
In politics or the military, what should he do? How to bring things in line with Krishna consciousness. Political leaders, military leaders, they should try to bring things in line with Krishna's direction. A political leader has great opportunities. As he's leading, then other so many are following. Therefore, they're meant to get their directions from those who are self-realized souls. The kings are all supposed to have advisors. What are those advisors? They're the Brahmins. They're the persons who see the spiritual welfare of the society. Then the politicians and the military people, they're the executive. So they should get good direction on what to execute their spiritual knowledge. Not that they have to get all the details of how to implement, that's their intelligence. But what is the, where are we going? Where the leader's on the horse with the sword, is, you know, charge, but where are we charging to? That requires, that you should understand. Everything follows from that. You should see the example of great kings like Brikshit Maharaj, Mali Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj. Get the clue there. Highest dharma is to surrender to Krishna. Sarva dharma pratyaja mam ekam sharanam. Krishna says, you give up all other dharma. The real dharma is to surrender to me. That's the highest dharma. Otherwise, we do everything else, all tarnig, and you don't become Krishna conscious. Then it's all a waste.
My other question, Maharaj, is, you know, I think one of my worst, I've got many many worse qualities. But I think one that seems to hinder my progressing in my spiritual life or in Krishna consciousness is that I kind of don't know how to turn a blind eye, as they would say. You know, I tend to want to change so many things or try to, you know, unfair situations, try to make them fair or anything. And I can see that that's not really going to do much for me. How to control my mind, like how to turn a blind eye. Is that what I should be doing? To turn a blind eye?
Blind eye is not necessarily required, but an enlightened eye, all right, this is what's going on. Not like I don't see it, but now what am I going to do about it? Is it within my power? Is it within my duty? It's just practical things, like yesterday, Govinda Gopal, Radhe Radhe Shyam, you know, I went over there, took a look at it, saw that it was some guy who's not, you know, one of our members, he's not a brahmachari or something, and said to myself, well, you know, if I try to intervene here, it's not going to work. Right? I'm going to create a scene, the guy's going to get uptight, he's going to... And all these people are sitting here and they're going to be wondering, you know, what's going on. So I just made a note of it, you know, I'll talk this through later. Because it's not within my power to do anything with her. And it's not my duty, I'm not one of the managers here, I'm not running the show. So just make a note that, okay, to the guys in charge. Not blind, but realistic. Part of being realistic is to assess how much can I do and how much is my duty. Say, that's in Bhagavad Gita, better to do your own duty badly than someone else's very well. So is it my duty to get involved in this? Is it my duty to change this or fix this or turn this around? Maybe it is. Or maybe it's okay, it's wrong, but it's not my job. Right? Not everything is my job. So we have to evaluate. There's some popular saying like that. God grant me the
wisdom to know what I can change.
Yeah,
accept what I can change and give
yeah.
knowledge to know the difference.
Knowledge to know the difference. It's a common saying these days. Be realistic. And Krishna says, tolerate. The world's full of junk. It's said about Ananta Shesh that sometimes he sees the conditioned souls and how they're just carrying on with their nonsense and not becoming Krishna conscious, not surrendering to Krishna, he feels like just burning the whole world up. At the time of annihilation, that's Ananta Shesha's function. He just destroys the whole world. So sometimes he looks at the world, sees what's going on, and feels like burning it up now. But he considers, you know, that's not my job. We'll wait on that.
Loud.
You should have like a limit to like material entertainment, like watching sports and movies and doing all those kind of things now that you like become enlightened about this chanting.
Yeah.
Should we balance things or just like try it or give it up completely or?
Yeah, that's a good balance. 100% Krishna consciousness, zero sports and entertainment. That's a very good balance.
No, I'm asking, should we balance or should we give up?
Yeah, that's a good balance. 100% Krishna consciousness and zero cricket, balance. Soccer, blah, blah, blah. Anya Vilasha Dushunya.
welcome. For sports, we like chanting and dancing. And distributing books. That's like a, what's the challenge sport? Distribute books, you'll have more adventures than you could imagine. We have better entertainment. Have you been to the DVD tent?
No, I have. The reason I'm asking is because the association I have at the moment, like immediate family, they find those things entertaining. And they would like me to join them.
Right.
So, and I'm kind of like over it.
There's a mantra I can teach you that you can employ when they're pulling like that.
Yeah.
Forget it.
So I should go along and just be there and not be there?
No, just tell them forget it. And if they need the further explanation, say not interested. Really? Just because they're...
Understood.
Prahlad Maharaj was like that. The teachers were working real hard to teach him politics and diplomacy and friends and enemies and divide and conquer. And finally they brought him to his father. So Prahlad, what's the best thing that you learned as a teacher, from your teachers? And Prahlad said, I learned all rubbish from my teachers. The real thing I've learned is this. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. Be engaged in devotional service to Krishna. None of that rubbish my teachers have told. Wasn't exactly the message Hiranyakashipu wanted to hear, but good message. The rest of us are hearing and enjoying. What benefit do they? What benefit am I going to get by watching the soccer match? Bunch of foolish oafs chasing a ball around. They're mad about it. Therefore, we're advised. Actually, in that no gambling, you know, one of our rules is no gambling. And Prabhupada included in that idle sports. It's one of the things we avoid, is just idle sports. Because it's a waste of our time. Think how much our time is worth. Chanakya Pandit says you can't buy 1 minute back, even for heaps of gold. So if we've wasted an hour on the soccer match, how much money have we lost? Our life is precious. The world is stupid, you know, people are wasting their time. Stupid, stupid things. And it's not because they're stupid, we have to be stupid. We've been stupid for lifetimes. Enough is enough.
Like shopping. Mm-hmm. I meant shopping. Shopping.
Shopping, yeah.
Like another people.
Well, that's easy for men to understand. Women will never understand it, therefore they have to shop for the deities. Then it's all right. Right?
Yes.
There's no force in the material world stronger than a woman's desire to go shopping. So they should shop for the deities, then everything. Yes.
We are educating people to be Brahmins.
Yes.
And sannyasis. We find in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna spent most of the time with the Kshatriyas. And most of the positions that are Kshatriyas, they have Brahmins.
We're not trying to get people to become Brahmins. And Krishna didn't spend most of his life as a Kshatriya. He spent 100% of his life being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we want to spend 100% of our lives being devotees of the Supreme Personality. That's his duty, is to be God, and our duty is duty. His position is to be God, and our duty is to serve him. That's all. We may be so-called Brahmin, Kshatriya, but that's not the point. The point is to be a devotee of Krishna.
Devotee, when you come, people get the impression that to be a full-time devotee, you know, rather than understanding that.
Everyone should be a full-time devotee.
But everyone would not be.
Everyone should be a full-time devotee. You may stay at the temple, you may stay someplace else, but everyone should be a full-time devotee. Not a half-time devotee. That's good. They'd like to do that.
Sometimes we find after some time, because of the nature, they actually leave the temple.
That's all right also. If they've spent 6 months or a year or however much time in the temple, so that was good training for them. And then if they go on and do something else, they have that background. And if they stay on in the temple, it's wonderful. In the old days, the students would go to the place of the guru and study with the guru. And then some would stay on, you know, brahmacharis. And some would go and get married and so on. So either way, they got benefit because they spent that time in training. So anyone who, our temples are for training. You may not stay forever. But if you take this training and take it seriously, alright, then you go on and you do this, you do that. But hold on to that valuable asset and continue to capitalize on that, whether you're married life, business life, this life, that life.
I can't believe after 10 years you are still asking the same question. The same questions, meaning the kind of issues that I'm dealing with, that means it's the same thing that I've been dealing with since I came. And so I'm just kind of feeling like, what have I been doing?
From one point of view, we're always dealing with the same issues. Our whole life. You know, Maya's on one side, Krishna's on the other side, and we're trying to be on this side, not that side. That's the issue. And it comes up in different ways. We're always dealing with our mind. We're always dealing with our senses. So these are the real issues. Karmis have so many issues to deal with, this issue, that issue, but they're skipping the real issues. How to get free from clutches of Maya, how to develop their Krishna consciousness. That issue they've missed. They're all, you know, so many issues in the newspaper. So we don't have so many issues, we only have a few. Someone's attached to you, and they're attached to Krishna.
No, you're attached to Krishna.
And you're attached to Krishna. They're automatic. That happens, yeah? You're touched on an electric wire. The wire is attached to the mains. So now you're getting the electric current. So that's true. Just like you're serving someone who's serving Krishna, so you're being connected to Krishna. That's okay. Devahuti was a princess. She was serving her husband, and because her husband was a great sage, so she was getting the benefit of devotional service. She wasn't thinking, by serving my husband, I'll be pleasing Krishna, but she was just serving her husband. Her husband was a great devotee, she was getting the benefit. So it is true. If we can become a servant of a devotee, or become attached to a devotee, we'll make progress.
I don't know if I want to talk about marriage with you, but I can.
Marriage?
Yes, a question about that.
Marriage is very
like
questionable, yes.
You must treat each other as devotees in the house.
Excuse me?
You must treat each other as devotees in the house.
Yes. That marriage means not that my wife is a machine for sense gratification. My husband is a machine for dispensing dollars. But they're for mutual cooperation in Krishna's service. That's real marriage. And what else? Yes.
Maharaj, young people, they're thinking a lot about getting established in a career and making moves, and maybe at some point they start to get a little interested in us, Bhakti Yoga, the Hare Krishnas. But then their life is going to be taking them off in directions all over the world and far away from association and into a lot of other things. I notice nowadays it's never the fashion to say to anyone, just stay, you know, change your career, change your plans, just stick to good association. Should we try to empower people so that they can go off and be devotees and do their own thing at the same time, or just depend
that
on Krishna, or what?
In Bhaktivedanta Manor, they have a sabbatical program.
Oh.
You know, don't give up your studies, but after, you know, take a year out, study Krishna consciousness. So many students do something of that sort. They, you know, spend a summer in Europe or whatever it is, some learning experience. So they have a program like that, you know, spend some time and learn this science. That's more acceptable to some people. They don't have to right on the spot decide, is it my life or not? But could I take a year? 6 months, could I take 2 months? Some of those people may also decide this is more important than other things, they just do this. Then others will attract substantial training. I always sort of like the idea of questioning career and blah, 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 blah. Sort of shoot for the top there. And then maybe someone will say, yeah, what am I wasting my time with this? And others may say, well, I don't think I can go that far, but you know, let's stick around for whatever else you might need to go. Very good.
I'd like to know, why is it easier to show tolerance towards a stranger? Oftentimes it's more difficult to tolerate those close to us.
That's kind of typical. The investment is greater in those closer to us, and it's more of a big deal. You know, if some stranger says I'm a jerk, so what do I care? My wife tells me I'm a jerk. You know, thou a serious man. So it's sort of ordinary. Take your time. Yeah, you want to go join the kirtan? I would feel better.
Right, at that point that Manas Bandamata was talking the right way, wouldn't reach some people, they're going to go in another direction.
I have to look at my Kunshi, see what I'm supposed to be doing. I have this feeling in the back of my head I'm supposed to be something. So, yeah, I am actually. I'm supposed to be over at. Well, wait. No. That was yesterday's schedule. I can do what I want.
Okay. Yeah, like, you find, okay, well, like, when we started, the whole, when we started, you know, the leaders at the time in Pretoria were all about just give up everything and just move into the temple. But then, we saw that as well, like when we started preaching that, you know, we're losing a lot of students as well. How do we keep a balance? At the same time, say, once we have certain people interested, like say students interested, how do we then keep them afterwards, once they finish studying, and how do you then keep them practicing further?
Going to be engaged in career professional activity. Then you want to create, to arrange things in such a way that you have something of value to fulfill all the purposes of that. Exactly how you do that, that's up to you. Prabhupada was always thinking of different ways to engage people in Krishna's service. Whether it was by their professional talent, by their money, by their intelligence, by their physical energy. Always thinking, how can I get this person to be engaged in Krishna's service? And it's not just one way, you know. This is it. This is the Hidamori River, you know. You've got like a cookie cutter, crusty and approach and things. Everybody's got to fit in the same mold or it's not going to work. But, see, here's a person. How can this person be engaged in Krishna? Successful marriage is the one that's over. You know, like a soccer game. When is it successful? When it's over. When you retire from family life, you've won.
Okay, but let's say there's not an option, man. Let's say. And the game's going on. And it's kick off time.
Successful means that in your family life you're engaged in Krishna's service. Successful means that in your family life you're engaged in Krishna's service. Generally at home we keep the deity of Krishna and we're thinking that what's going on here is for the service of the deity. Materialist is thinking, I'm the center of everything. The devotee thinks that Krishna is the center. So the wife, the husband, they're all engaged in the service of the deity. And the children are trained how to become devotees. Anashrita karma phalam. Karyam karma purotiya. sa-sannyasi. Krishna said, the real sannyasi is not the person who gives up work, gives up, but he's always doing what he's, well, what he's duty bound to do, without attachment to the result. He has no attachment to the results. He just thinks that this is my duty, let me do it for Krishna.
That is a perfect answer. Thank you.
Maharaj, I have a question. I was wondering what would be your stake when it comes to two people of the same sex wanting to raise children, wanting to make a family together, for example, two men or two women.
That's it. I wonder how they do that. You're a doctor, how do they do that?
Well, they can adopt, or for example, in the case of two women, they can use artificial insemination. But
yeah. Well, one of our principal suggestions for anyone who takes up Krishna consciousness is to avoid illicit sex.
Okay.
So, generally, that means sex for any purpose other than having children. That means homosexual life has no place. So we don't have very much, you know, then how to have a successful homosexual life, we really don't have much advice for that.
What if they don't, they just raise the children and don't mate as, like, they don't have sexual relationships, which is difficult, of course.
Then what do they want to be together for?
I don't know.
Just
to be together. Like, be friends together.
That's not really what it's about. I mean, that's not how it works, is it? That's a storybook version.
Well, some people say that they are together. It's not only about sex, but sometimes it's about...
Right, it's not only about sex, but it's quite a bit about sex, and then the other stuff is also there.
Well, saying that would be the same as saying that a man and a woman are only, when they're together, it's only about sex. I think there is a kind
of... No, but the basic principle is sex. Man is interested in a woman, woman's interested in a man. What's the basic principle of that attraction? It's sex. You know, anybody who says it's not, you know, where is he coming from? And marriage means that sexual attraction is regulated, it's channeled, it's employed for useful, in a useful direction. But if he's not interested in sex, he has no need of a wife. Stays brahmachari and saves all the trouble. We don't have much, you know, the starting point is wrong. So we don't say, well, here we are at 2 plus 2 equals 5, 5 plus 3, 8 equals 8, 8 plus 2 equals 10, where do we go from here? The basic principle was wrong.
Well, is it safe to say it's a terminal gain by Lord Krishna, because of Lord Krishna transpiration?
I can't hear you.
It's safe to say that it's not gained by Lord Krishna, because when creation started, it was created first man and first woman. That's how I wanted the obligation to be.
You're fading out. You know, South Africa is such a polite country. Everybody's so soft-spoken. You can't hear what anybody says. Shout.
When the Lord created,
yeah,
He created first man and first lady.
Yeah.
And He asked them to create or populate the world.
Right.
And that is how the Lord wanted this to. This process should take place.
Yeah.
And not just take place as male and male.
Yeah. Male and male is generally not very productive.
Thank you.
as you said, I do believe that if marriage is about having children and sex in marriage is only about having children, then it's true. A homosexual relationship doesn't have any place. The thing is, like, other religions and, of course, but that's not, doesn't have place here. But in other religions, they say that marriage is not about only sex, I think. It's about the relationship that you have with the person and when you want to grow together. And maybe they want two men, for example, would want to be together, to grow together in faith or something like that.
Then, yeah, we have a place for that in Krishna consciousness. It's called friendship. You know, that's pretty clear. Friends are one thing and lovers are another thing. We're not confused about which is which. Love is meant for Krishna. Anywhere else, it will be frustrating. Man and man, woman and woman, it will be frustrating. Love is meant for Krishna.
Is it safe to say, because of Kali Yuga, people's intelligence are failing them? That's why they're going into. People's intelligence are failing them, and that is why they're going into other things.
Every other thing. Kali Yuga means anything but Krishna. Anything but Krishna. And it's anything but Krishna means Maya. Maya's offering in different ways. This will make you happy, that will make you happy. And it's all a sham. Politics will make you happy, sex will make you happy. Drugs will make you happy, this will make you happy, that will make you happy. It's all baloney. None of it works. The senses are dissatisfied. They're not going to be satisfied this way, that way. With a woman, with a man, with a this, with a that. Senses will never be satisfied in this material world. They should be engaged in the service of Krishna, otherwise they'll never be satisfied.
I'd like to ask if what how do you define time?
How do we?
Define time.
Define time?
Does it have character? Can you control it? How can
it controls you? Time is Krishna ultimately. We're born at a certain time, we die at a certain time. Can't control it. But the time that's given to you, you can engage in Krishna service. You can manage the time that's given to you. Not exactly control. Time is ultimately beyond our control. But we can take the time given to us and use it in Krishna service. Is that okay? Is that what you want to ask for?
I mean, like, most of the time it happens like we never have enough of it. I'm not sure how you can plan, maybe.
If you engage, every moment of your time that you engage in Krishna's service is a plus. And every moment of time that's lost from Krishna's service is a minus. The more you engage your time in Krishna's service, the more time you'll have. And finally, if you engage your full time in Krishna's service, you'll have all eternity. Is that Okay.
People we meet, they're very open-minded, and that's why they take a chance to get interested in what we're doing, you know. At the same time, part of their open-mindedness means that they appreciate a lot of stuff that maybe we don't appreciate so much, or we see some flaws in it. Even some spiritual leaders that are involved in kind of maybe illicit activity or something like this, you know. So if we come out and we just say, oh, this other thing that you like to do, or this other person you're interested in, you know, this is no good. Maybe it sounds like we're trying to stake a claim or be possessive, you know. How do you think we should deal with that?
Prabhupada usually didn't attack this person or that person. He would address the philosophy. When somebody says, what do you think of Osho, or what do you think of Vivekananda, or what do you think of this? I would say, so what is his philosophy? Let's talk about the philosophy. Not that, you know, oh, that guy's a jerk, he doesn't really talk about it. So what's his philosophy? What does he teach? What does he say is the goal of life? We can talk about that. They're ramping up over there, so you have to be real loud.
I have a very short time around, so I've not engaged with many people about my things.
You're a newcomer here.
I might sound a bit out, but I want to understand that. In my understanding, the spirit does not have memory.
You're right.
The spirit doesn't have memory.
Why not?
Because it's a spirit, and that's in my understanding. So I need help to understand what you understand. My understanding of the spirit does not have memory because it's just a spirit. And my understanding, the memory goes with mind and whatever that goes with the flesh. So I want to know, how does that help?
Actually, the body doesn't have any memory. The mind doesn't have any memory. When a spirit leaves the body, the body doesn't remember anything, right?
That's why I was thinking about it the other way around.
Other way around means?
Meaning that when the spirit goes, everything remains.
The body is like a machine, you know, like a car.
Not an instrument, because an instrument...
It's an instrument. So when you're playing an instrument, who remembers the tune, the clarinet or you?
The player.
Right. So in this body, in the mind, finally there's a player. The player is the spirit.
There's the player, but the player can't produce the same thing that the instrument produces. So there's
no, it's actually the player who's producing it. When the clarinet is playing, we say, oh, there's a clarinet playing. But the clarinet doesn't play anything. It's the player who plays the clarinet.
Yeah, because I understand in terms of, if we put it in that example of the player and the instrument, I would say that the body is the instrument.
Right.
And Krishna is the one responsible for that.
Well, there are two players.
The spirit is the one that travels in between.
Yeah. The body is the instrument. Krishna is the ultimate player, and we're the in-between player. Just like there's a coach, and he's deploying, okay, you be tackle, you be the whatever it is, the guard.
So he's directing the players, and then the players are carrying on the game. But Krishna's the ultimate player. He's picking us up and putting us down here and there.
Hence, I thought that maybe the spirit is the one that plays the key between Krishna and the body itself.
Yeah. So that spirit's not less than the body, the spirit is more than the body.
The spirit is?
More than the body, not less. Just like in the car, the driver is more than the car. The car doesn't go anywhere on its own. It's the driver, even though he's just a small guy. But when he puts his foot on the pedal, when he turns the wheel, then the car goes. Even though the car is the car weighs a ton and he weighs 150 pounds. But the man, because he has the intelligence.
In that example, where does the... What represents the spirit?
The spirit is like the person. The person is actually not the body, not the mind. The spirit is the actual person. You say, my body, my mind. Who's the I? Yeah. Well, I'm the spirit. And my body is the tool that I'm using. My mind is another tool that I'm using.
Maybe I'm failing to understand the spirit itself. Maybe that's what I'm failing to understand. I need to understand the role it plays and the power of the gift it has.
Body is Krishna's superior energy. The inferior energy is controlled by the superior energy. They're finally both controlled by Krishna. The spirit has consciousness. The body doesn't have that.
Another thing would be, since in between the flesh and the spirit, my question is that why would Krishna himself create the flesh, which at the end of the day
it's troublesome.
It's just the flesh.
Yeah. Because we want it.
And I'm gonna leave it behind.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't it have a role somewhere? Can't we find
it's unnecessary, but because we want it, Krishna provides it. It's unnecessary. Spirit doesn't need this body. But because we want it, Krishna provides it.
But there's a reason why it was put into the flesh.
Because we want it.
Not him.
So we existed.
Why us? Why is it our decision that we put our spirit in the flesh when we did not even create the flesh?
It's something like a mistake that we make. We think that we can be happy by looking away from Krishna towards something else. So Krishna gives us the something else that we have in mind.
But technically everything is a thought. We always think we'll be happy.
Yeah.
And as much as now I always feel like I'll be happy if I become a follower and follow the spirit, but nothing says yes, you'll be happy. Just like nothing said when you get into the spirit, you'll be happy.
I couldn't hear you.
I'm saying, technically, everything is a thought. First, like you said, we thought maybe by as the spirit to get into the flesh, we'd be happy. And I'm saying that even now, I'm here on this journey and I'm thinking and I believe that at the end of the day or at some point, I will be happy when I'm more in control and I'm protecting the spirit. I'm in the spirit.
Yeah, you'll be happy on the spiritual platform, not the material platform. That's right.
But it's just a thought, just like...
It is just a thought, but some thoughts are better than others. That's a better thought.
But how do we know that? How do we differentiate that?
One thing is you can have your practical experience.
Pardon?
One is by practical experience. The more we try to enjoy this material energy, the more we get burned. It happens again and again, or if you look at history. The history is people trying to enjoy the material world and getting burned again and again.
Is it being born or is it growth? is it being bored or is it broke?
Is it being bored or being broke?
Is it
broke? Being closed or
is it growth? Is it growing up? Like, in every time things have to develop.
Yeah.
And me too, as the spirit in the flesh, this something has to develop, and I discover things as I grow.
As we become, as we grow, we should become spiritually advanced.
We become?
We should become spiritually advanced. That's real growth. The body grows, that's automatic. But we should grow spiritually also.
Yes.
That we can do by Krishna consciousness.
We do grow spiritually, unconscious.
Well, we may or may not. Some people never grow up, you know. They remain spiritually retarded.
Because technically, at the end of the day, growing up.
Is there a microphone?
Yeah, yeah.
Because somewhere at the end of the day, growing up is more like a realization of something.
We're getting a microphone, and maybe this will help us.
Hold on.
This microphone works. Okay.
I'm getting lost word in my head, because I was just saying every, like, in the spirit, with the spirit, as growing up, how I can say growing up comes into the picture. Growing up is realization. It's when realize things don't grow.
You have to hold it like this.
Yeah, growing up is realization. If you don't realize things, you don't grow.
Yeah.
So, technically, aware or unaware, we do grow. We just have to identify those things so that we can be considered to have grown.
Well, there's a lot of people who look like they're grown-ups, but they've never grown. You know, they're physically mature, but spiritually, they never grew up. Because spiritual growth doesn't happen automatically. It requires training. You know, like education, it doesn't automatically happen. So spiritual growth is possible. You know, it's like when you plant a seed and you water it and there's sunshine, then the plant grows. But no water, no sun, the plant doesn't grow. So spiritual growth takes place when we sprinkle on it transcendental sound. And when we stay in the sunshine of those who are spiritually advanced. Otherwise, just floating around in the material world doesn't help the spirit grow.
I understand that, and it is growth, yes. But what I want to say, and I'll have to repeat it again, is that we do grow.
Grow in which sense?
As the spirit, we do grow. Well, that's what I'm thinking.
No, that's what I'm saying, we don't.
You see people who have been in, you know, they're 40 years old, 60 years old, 80 years old, and they're spiritually dead. They didn't grow at all. It's not automatic. It's not just that the more time you spend here, the more your spirit grows. People practically are killing their spirit. Instead of spiritual growth, they're getting spiritual death. It doesn't just happen.
by osmosis. I have a teacher who said, you're not going to learn this by the process of osmosis, not just by being in the world, spirit grows. You have to do, you have to water it, you have to put sunshine, then the plant grows. And like here, there's spiritual growth because people are singing the holy name of God, people are talking about God, people are reading books about God, people are engaged in different kinds of service to God, they're eating food that's been offered to God. So there you get like spiritual growth in every direction. If this was a bar, you know, it would be the soccer match instead of the holy name of God. It would be Jack Daniels instead of spiritual food. It would be ignorance instead of knowledge. The spirit doesn't grow from ignorance. Spirit grows when there's knowledge. Spirit grows in the presence of God.
So, to grow up, you have to notice it. You have to notice it, like spiritual growth, do you notice it as you grow up? Because like you say, like people are here, they're chanting the mantras and some are eating spiritual food and all that. But does that make you grow if you don't realize it yourself?
Yeah, it requires your attention. We're meant to pay attention. Of course, even if you don't pay attention, just by being in this atmosphere and you're not really, don't even have your eyes open, and just being here, it's like being in the sun. You'll get something. But if you're, you know, really trying to pay attention, you'll get so much more. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Makes sense. Just raises questions.
Okay. Feel free, you know, whatever question you have. But this is our method, that place yourself in the sunshine, get that water going, and the plant will grow.
In the holy name of God, the association of people who are God's devotees, food that's offered to God, activity performed in devotion to God, that all nourishes the spirit.
Another question, I won't go further on that, but another question that I have is, in this material world I'm given, I've come across a couple of materials where you hear about cloning and stuff. And it has been proven that there was a cloned sheep that came to existence and all. And I just want to know if you've come across it. What does that say about the spirit?
Doesn't say much. They create another body, and so in the body a spirit enters. They can't create the spirit. They create another body, that's all. In nature that happens, starfish do that, they split and you get two starfish. But they haven't created the spirit of the starfish or the spirit of the sheep. Consciousness is not created by cloning or laboratory work.
No, that one is clear. I'm saying that one is more clear.
Good question.
I'm wondering what is the purpose of the material world if everybody becomes enlightened? Like if everybody has a relationship with Krishna and everybody grows and everybody detaches themselves from the material body, where is the purpose of this?
same use as the jam was, everyone becomes honest. The same use as the jail, once everyone becomes honest.
Maharaj Gombik is a question of relationships between people and love and so forth. Relationships between people who have material consciousness are very complex and troublesome, full of conflict. It should be that relationships between people who are more spiritually conscious should be deeper, should be better, more loving, like that genuine love. So what's the nature of that love between people have Krishna as the goal? You said love is for Krishna. So what about the exchanges between people who are both looking for Krishna?
Yeah, when their love is on the basis of common interest, there's still individuality. It's not that everybody has the same relationship with everybody in some sort of mechanical fashion. But our goal is the same. We try to serve Krishna, and we appreciate those who are trying to serve Krishna. We recognize that the holy person is serving Krishna. We want to be friends with maybe not every devotee of Krishna, but at least we want to have friends who are Krishna devotees. We want to serve the devotees. We want to reciprocate with the devotees. Guru Goswami says to reveal our mind to the devotees, to hear from the devotees, to give them something, receive something from them. But it's not on the basis of sense gratitude. In the material world, the relationship is, I say I love you so much, but really I'm thinking about my sense gratification. And whatever I have to say, you know, it's like in business, whatever you have to say to get a customer, but it's not sincere. There's so many insincere relationships. The man says so many things to please the woman, the woman says so many things to please the man, and it's all with a motive in the back that I need to get my sense gratification. Just as in business, the man says, you know, the company advertises, we're here to serve our customers. You know, obviously that's not what they're doing. They're there to make a profit. But they say these things. So in the material world, that's kind of how it goes on. But on the spiritual platform, there is a sincere desire to serve Krishna and to serve the soul. That's the difference. That's the difference. The sense gratification is not the point.
Is the love that you would feel towards another devotee then, is that part of your love for Krishna, or is that love when you say love is only for Krishna?
Krishna and those who are connected.
And those who are connected. And what about your love for people who are connected but don't know it and don't
therefore
aren't
we
angry for it?
Therefore
we try to bring them some knowledge of Krishna, devotional service to Krishna. Give them books, give them prasada, give them chanting. We feel some sympathy for them, some good wishes for them. We want to give them another to
them. One extension of the question is that it said that the two main problems of the conditioned soul is that he wants to be the enjoyer and the controller. So when it comes to relationships, the tendency is there to enjoy the exchanges, and this is, you know, my friend, even amongst devotees, you know, or even cultivating people. my Freddie, you know, this is, you know. So we get attached, we enjoy those people, that actually everyone is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. Is that like a bit of a fanatical thought? Can we freely enjoy the association of devotees?
It's not that we've taken a vow to be miserable. We enjoy the association of devotees. We're happy to have the association of devotees. But our happiness doesn't come from exploitation. We're happy that this person is advancing in Krishna consciousness. That makes the devotee happy. We see that someone's chanting, someone's dancing, someone's getting free from material entanglements. Someone's happily engaged in Krishna service. It's not now this person is finally doing what I want him to do. Now this person is finally, you know, going to do something that's going to make me, you know, richer or somebody I'm going to get more out of. That's not our purpose. You know, like in business, you know, if you get 5 more customers, you get a raise or something. It's not that if 5 more people become devotees, then now somehow my pay increases. Or, it's not for that. We're happy to see people engaged in Krishna service. That's the real reward. To the extent that I have some material motivation, I'll be missing out on the real thing.
When you speak to most of us, when you address and share, do you speak from a point of view which I would say is more spiritual or more of the flesh?
More
spiritual way or more in a fleshly way?
Well, our message is spiritual.
The message is spiritual.
Yeah, we're not. If you want to know how to make more money or how to get a better job or how to find a prettier wife or something like that, we're not the guy. Don't come talking to us. But that's not our job.
Yeah, because the same questions you do ask, because me, I don't have spiritual understanding, so I do ask the same spiritual questions that I want to know what I can do, but I ask them from a human way, from a flesh way, because I don't know the spiritual.
Yeah, that's good. But you're asking these questions is very good. However you come, you know, whatever direction you're coming from with them. Once
you're asking spiritual questions, you're asking the real questions. And it doesn't matter, you know, from where you're coming with those questions. You're bringing forward those questions from your own desire to understand. That's good. And our job is just to pass on what we've heard from spiritually enlightened sources. You know, we're just messengers here. We have a message that we've received and we're passing it on to you. You can give it to the next person.
Because I would love to know more of your experience than that. Even just more of a spiritual experience, more than just a way that has been passed on from generation to generation and will continue to be.
We're also waiting. There's people have been waiting for some time. The next
program, okay.
Yeah.
If you stay around the devotees, then by their company, you'll find out about their experience and their how they see things. You know, like the way you find out about it, you make a new friend. How do you find out what's with that friend? You stay together, you do things together, you talk together, you ask the person, you know, how did you get from there to here? So stay around the devotees. Come for the rest of the festival. You're here for the next couple of days. Come and mix with the devotees and ask your questions. A lot of tents where you'll meet the different people and get to put different questions to whoever you like. Or hear other people's questions and ask you. Pick up some books, find out more from the books. Take part in the chanting, you'll get some direct experience of what it is that we become attracted to. We have our centers, we come and pursue things further. We're going to disappear because I think there's another program waiting to take place here. Thank you all very much.